Without further ado, I'd like to introduce one of the world's greatest aviators, one of America's bravest heroes, and my best friend, Colonel Bud Anderson. Thank you, Bud.
Thank you, Jack.
I get a little misty every time I have to introduce you.
I think I'd just let you keep talking. I'd do better. I don't know whether I can talk sitting down.
I know you can't talk without.
Yeah, fighter pilots can't talk without. I might stand up. I don't know. It's getting a little hot, though. Yeah, I'm going to stand up. No, you don't have to stand up, though. No.
I've got to catch your mic when you need to go air to air overhead here.
Okay. Sit down. You know, I don't know. We had a big discussion about trying to talk about something new. I think I've been talking here for, I don't know, 15 years or more. And it seems like I keep telling the same old stories. And I pretty well told most of my stories.
Hey, Bud, let me tell you about the research you sent me out to do.
Okay.
I canvassed the crowd. I worked hours. Everybody, what question would you ask Bud Anderson? And the only new one I found was, what was your most exciting moment? And it was that open-ended. He didn't say in an airplane.
Wow, that opens up a whole new barnyard, doesn't it? Well, yeah. Okay, we'll get to that. Yeah, later. First, I want to say something about the warbird community. You know, I think any World War II pilot that flew in combat and then had an airplane painted like the very one you flew in World War II, you know, that's pretty special. I think a guy would probably give a body part for that. And here I am. I've had 4 different Mustangs painted like the old Crow. And, you know, it just kind of overwhelms me. Like John said, these things, I call them national treasures, but when you think about it, they are World War II memorials because, you know, we can't pin them up in the sky, and they're here to commemorate and inspire and things like that. And to have 4 different airplanes is, to me, a little bit overwhelming. The first two, and I don't remember which one was first, was the one in Norway and one in Florida, Mickey Rupp and Anders Sather in Norway. And then Mickey finally started racing his and finally painted it. Raced as the old Crow for a while, and then he painted it. He modified it so much it started not looking like a Mustang. So he put it into a racing scheme, and then eventually it crashed. And then Jack Ross came along and built this beautiful D model, which represents my complete tour, you know, the complete record.
I need to interrupt you a minute, but I know this is your moment, but, you know, when I got ready to paint up my airplane in 1994, I called Ed and Connie Boland, and I asked them, I says, what would be a reasonable motif for an airplane? And she says, will you call Colonel Bud Anderson, since he's the historian for the 357 Fighter Group. He knows all the pilots, and he says he could pick for you an airplane. And so I called Colonel Anderson, and he explored with me the careers and the heroic deeds of at least a dozen pilots and sent them off to me. And so I doubled back with Ed, and I says, Ed, you know, there's one guy's name who's not on here. I said, Colonel Anderson didn't put his own name on there. And he says that would be the best of all things. He said there's a 50th anniversary of the beginning of the Air Force, and there's a 50th anniversary of the sound barrier being broken. He says Colonel Anderson would fly that airplane, and it would mean a lot to the public if you do that. So, but I called Mickey Rupp and asked Mickey. I says, Mickey, are you going to paint your airplane back like Colonel Anderson's? I don't want to be getting in face here. He says no. He said it would be an honor, and I said, well, you need to call me, say something definite. Actually, I had the conversation with Ed Boland, and Ed Boland, I says, you need to have Mickey call me and tell me he doesn't want to do that. And Mickey called, and he says exactly as if I'd quoted it, and Ed had written it down, and he read back to me. He says, I'd be honored for you to paint your airplane like Colonel Bud Anderson's. I don't plan to make mine in a Warburg livery again. And he said, I would enjoy Colonel Anderson being able to fly an airplane if you're willing to let him fly it. And that's that story.
Yeah. Okay. Well, in any event, I just can't say enough about guys like Jack and all you guys out here in the Warburg community doing this, putting them in historical paint schemes. It's really incredible. It's beyond awesome. I was just a couple of months ago went to a small air show in Granite Falls, and I was just flabbergasted. Here's a little town, I don't know, less than 5,000 people, isn't it, Ron? 2,000, less than 2,000. And my God, he has built this museum out there. He's got a fleet of warbirds. And it was just an incredible time. And there's so many other of you that have done this that, like I say, I can't say enough about it. So now as far as what was my most exciting moment, aerial combat, I think, of course, it was certainly exciting. And I had so many exciting moments, I cannot pick out one that was more exciting than another. Perhaps the one that is on the History Channel with the dogfight series would qualify. But I'll give you a couple of ones, some that have a little bit of humor and then some that'll explain a few other different things, something a little bit different. I think my first aerial victory is not one of my most exciting moments. Well, kind of is to get your first victory, but it had a lot of humor about it and a lot of doubt and things like that, and it makes a good story. And we got over there in England in 1943, and we started flying combat in very early February of 1944. And I was one of the original members of the 357th Fighter Group, and what that meant was that you're a flight leader. You're out in front, and when the stuff hits the fan, you're expected to get involved. It's a tremendous opportunity for promotion and to be in the front when you're in combat. And we'd been on several missions, and we started getting victories in our squadron, in our group. And Bud Anderson hasn't had one yet. I had followed one down to 18,000 feet and broke it off and came back, and more about that later. But that was the rule at the time, was you could chase the enemy to 18,000 feet, and then you had to knock it off, go back up, and protect the bombers. They wanted to see you close. They wanted you to be close. And the enemy came in, they wanted you to drive them away and then come right back. It wasn't the way to do it, but that's the way it was initially. So finally, I think it was in early March sometime, I was leading a flight of two or four or whatever it was, and we were on our way home. We had done our escort duty, and we were heading home, and another flight of three or four joined up with me and headed out towards home. So I'm leading this pack of seven or eight airplanes. And as I'm exiting, or still away in Germany, I look up ahead, and I see a B-17 down low, and he's engine smoking, and obviously a straggler, and all by himself. So I said, "Well, shoot, let's drive over there and take him out to the coast." So he's over here, we're over here. And mind you, I had a bunch of Mustangs, and we started over that way. And I've looked over here, and here comes two ME-109s. Their bellies up to us. They couldn't see us, fortunately, or unfortunately for them. And they're coming. They see this straggler, and they're after the straggler. And they're bellied up, and they come down like that. And I said, "All right, I got one of those. One of those guys is going to be mine." So we go over there and engage them, and they broke up immediately. And I'm dogfighting with one, and one of the other guys has got the other. So it's down low. It's down lower than normal. And I didn't know it, but they tell me now. Now I learn years later that an ME-109 in the hands of a good pilot could give a Mustang a hard time down low, 15,000 feet. We were about 20. And so I get on this guy immediately. He's hard braking. We're doing these turns. When you want to shoot somebody down, you want to get right at their 6 o'clock, you know, right dead behind them like that, close as you can, and fire. If you try to shoot them out here at 90 degrees angle off, it's possible to hit them, but not very likely. And we're not in a nice turning circle where, you know, I'm looking across the circle at him. We're in a concentric thing, and he's coming at me at a high angle, and I'm coming at him at a high angle, and we're going around. And I can't figure out why I can't shoot this guy down. Now, I do need a little help here. So I thought, next time he comes around in this turn, and I'm going at this ridiculous angle at him, I think what I'll do is I'll just pull my nose through him and fire a shot ahead of him. I won't be able to see him because my belly's up to him. And I'll fire this shot and hope that he flies through the stream. Got it. Thank you, Jack. So he comes around the next time, and I do that. I pull my nose through him, and he, you know, now he's below me. He's under my belly. I can't see him. I fire a nice, pretty good burst out there like that. When he comes out in front of me, he's streaming coolant. I got him. You know, boy, you know, and I started, it was a real thrill. This was my first kill. And the guy pulled up like that and bailed out immediately. So no question about it. I got witnesses, and, you know, the thing crashed. And so I rolled out, and I'm still thinking about it. Kind of looked out my wing, and here's another Mustang sitting right on my wing. He's up there. He was down low. He had his mask off, and it was Johnny England. England Air Force Base, Louisiana. Remember that place? It's the guy it was named after. And he'd already had a couple of kills, and he was from a different squadron. And he's up on my wing, and he's looking at me, and he's grinning, and he went like this. And, you know, and I thought for a minute, you know, did he shoot that sucker out from under me? I knew it was a lucky shot if it had. I thought, you know, that's not very sportsmanlike, but, you know, there's a war going on, I guess. And anyway, it took me, you know, another 2 hour, hour and a half to get home. And by the time I got home, I convinced myself that Johnny England probably shot that.